Welcome to the CEN show, where we present the voice of the community. The communityeducationnetwork.com is a platform to aid the effort of self and collective improvement. I am your host, Rasaki Mascani. Tonight's topic is cultivating our curiosity for those who work in the system. Tonight's guest is Ms. J. Dub. This is her third visit, and we're glad to have her back again. Good evening, Ms. J. Dub. How are you? And can you begin our wonderful topic this evening?
Yes. Hi, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, I'm J. Dubs, and I excited to be a part of these talk series. Today, I wanted to, there's like so many things I want to talk about, but I guess I wanted to explore something personal, and I get it'll make sense when I share a little bit about why I chose this question and can guide you in answering and discussing and about the topic of creativity. So I work in a school, which is clearly a part of the system, where it's institutionalized and there's a lot of red tape and there's a lot of other challenges that come with working within a system, like the abuse of power and it's been a lot. And I've been really thinking about what it means to like foster my personal creativity, because so that I can go back into like the school, not, you know, having a more wider imagination of like what could be, as well as like a larger like creative energy and how to, you know, work through my classroom, how to be in just like the space with more joy. And I've had this conversation with other teachers, and I realize a lot of teachers are actually artists. Like maybe we all stumble upon some sort of arts, whether it be like literally like painting or drawing or cooking, or we just make things. We make a lot of things. And I don't know what the correlation is, but it seems like maybe it's like the pressure of the system that leads us to create beautiful moments in our classrooms, as well as like literal things in our life. And so I wanted to hear everyone's thoughts on what questions you all have had around the subject of creativity. And if you've also thought about, well, what does it mean for people who are bounded by something, like some sort of system, and their urge to create something.
Okay, I want to say something here. I know we have Professor Amaron here, and I have a quick little story. Now, When I went to Long Beach State, I was finishing up basketball, and I didn't even know anything about Professor Amaron, and he was like a legend on the campus. And because I was playing basketball, my focus was basketball, I didn't realize the wealth of information that was on campus. At the time, my major was recreation administration, and I was basically, you know, going to school to play basketball. So once I finished basketball, I was like a junior school-wise. And so I had a little ways to go to get my degree. And then I stopped for maybe a semester or two going to school after I finished playing ball. And then I started going back to school and I discovered Professor Armand Rae at Compton College. And a lot of people that I knew said, "You didn't know Professor Armand Rae?" I said, "No, I didn't know him." And so when I went to his classes, I changed my net major to Black Studies. And I began going to his classes, and I saw a unique type of education occurring. And I was, you know, pleasantly surprised. And I started to enjoy school. And that creativity and the curiosity that you speak of, I think Professor Armand Rae was able to cultivate his creativity into the classroom and reach a whole bunch of students and be successful. So Professor Rae, can you speak about that? The type of educational system that you had being in the confines of a university system?
Yeah, I appreciate what you said, and if I understand correctly, and appreciation Sister J-Dove, perspective of creativity. That's one of the principles of the Nguzo Saba, Kaumba, which means creativity. And that's a unique instrument. But see, I came up in the movement. We had a Black movement going to be self-determining and to free ourselves so we could be ourselves. What I hear J-Dub is saying that she's in a system that may stifle creativity because it's you have to go by the process. She's in a public high school where there are a lot of rules. I was at a university where we deal with adults. Second, I was in the movement of revolutionizing education and teaching it from an Afrocentric perspective. And because I was at the university level, I could do that because we weren't talking to kids. But when you're teaching kids, that's why you have to have a public high school, a credential. And that credential requires you to do student teaching and to take a series of classes. When I was coming along, you could get a lifetime credential. You can't even get that anymore. And so therefore there's a lot of rules because of the role of parents and that you're teaching people that are minors. And so there's sometimes some teachers don't want to get outside the boundaries. Now there's a whole national network of what they call revolutionary teachers that are doing, and principals and schools. Man, they got one in New York, New Jersey, where this brother opened up the gym at midnight. They have midnight, they have community type of consortiums and getting the community involved. And you know, they deal with hip hop artists and all that stuff. It's different. My son's involved in that. And so they got books about it. They deal with restorative justice. And these are young people that want creative teachers, but they're principals that give you the latitude. Now, if you're in a school where the principal is just into just following the policies and rules, because they're not into creativity, then that will create the problem that Ms. Dove is going through, because the principal is not creating an atmosphere, whereas he encourages and supports creativity and communications through creativity with students and with other teachers. For instance, at my son's school, they got they got three houses, I mean, four houses. One is after Nipsey Russell, the other one's after Obama House. Then they got, and these, and they meet, you know, each, the students, they get deeply involved in relationships. And, you know, they plan things, they get involved. The teachers are able to be more creative because they're not under the stress. This is LA Unified, and they're not under the stress, but that's because of his principalship and his working with creativity. Going back to me at Cal State Long Beach, you gotta remember, I was a basketball player also, and I went to school, but when I went there, Tarkanian used to tell the story that when he recruited me and brought me to campus, all the other athletes would say, where's financial aid, where's the gym, where's, you know, the various things related to education, where's the EOP office and all of that. My first question to Tark is, you know, where is the BSU, the Black Student Union? And that tickled him to a point that I would be, that he used to tell that to, you know, at banquets and everything when he introduced me. My point is that I came to college with not only an athletic perspective, but a consciousness of struggle, a consciousness to change. We were involved in a movement to create change. And what I hear Ms. Dove is saying is that they want to change the atmosphere where they work, where when you're in a system that tries to, you know, how do you become creative within that context of that system? And I think that you just meet with the principal, tell them what ideas you have, and if it's okay, whether you want to use art, what you want to use. You know, when we was coming along in high school, we had about maybe, and I think Doc and Machina could attest to this, we had about maybe four, at least 10 student organizations. You know, different student organizations. Now you don't see that, you know, but we also had vocational classes, wood shop, metal shop, drafting, just organization. You know, they had even a home economics association. And so that's for the young lady. They had GAA for the women, because women's sports didn't take off until the mid-70s. And with the woman lib, you know, the now thing. So she got a point. You got a lot of people that just want to get through the day. And the best way to get through the day is just implement a system-orientated school. I just want to make sure the kids are safe, make sure we have adequate attendance, and, you know, just hope that don't nobody die and get into a major fight among all the students. So I don't know, but, you know, my situation is totally different from hers, because she's in schools that went through a bunch of changes. You know, there was a lot of violence going into the 70s on campus, the drug explosion, the sexuality challenges with regards to the gay movement. There's a lot of things on high school campuses now that wasn't there when we was coming through school. It's a whole different, the way they dress or don't dress. You know, school was like, you know, you dressed up, or people talked about you so bad, you'd be embarrassed if you came the way some of these kids dress. And the haircuts and the hairstyles they have, it's been laughed out of school when we was coming up. But today, the kids are more creative than the teachers in many ways with regards to their lifestyles and things of this nature. But the focus is on testing. So whenever you focus on testing only, it leaves little room for creativity and to really assess the needs of a student who can learn differently from testing. You know, and that's a, and they give you incentives for productivity in testing. The school to get the highest test, the student to get the best score in testing. And so the emphasis is on testing. So that stifles a lot of creativity for those that don't have a principal that could do both. Satisfy the system, that's what I always did on a university level, satisfying what I had to teach, cover the subject matter, but gives that sacred knowledge and that special knowledge at the end, you know, before, you know, 10 minutes after, 15 minutes before class end, sometimes 15 minutes before, you know, you drop lugs on students to try to motivate and inspire them to be the best that they can be. You know, challenge them to be A students in no matter what subject. Explain to them that there's going to be teachers that ain't cool. Don't worry about that. You know, just you know, your job is to get through. You're going to go through life with the same way you go through this college. Ups, downs, conservatives, liberals, independents, some teachers that care about students, some teachers that don't. That's the way the world is. And so, you know, you try to give them that knowledge. That's all. I didn't mean to talk so long, Mr. Dub. This is your show. But I don't know if I covered what you were talking about.
Yeah, I think you did.
That was amazing.
Okay, so Ms. J. Dub, can you talk about some of the things that you do inside the classroom? Because I visited your classroom a few times and I see some unique things going on at times.
Yeah, well, I think as Professor Amin-Ra was speaking, I realized like relationships are like one of the most important things about creativity, like dialoguing and like connecting with other people. And so I do try to do that, but you know, in the past, we would do a lot of different projects, photo projects. We've done video. I was thinking about this today because the first year I was here, actually, I had a lot of energy because it was my first year in our school district. I was coming from LAUSD, which was also like another beast of its own, but I was in a charter school, which is a little bit different. So when I came to public school, I came really eager and did two projects that I fell in love with. Till this day, I look back and want to continue to do projects like that. Well, like three projects actually. But the first one was a video project where kids made like these little kind of like a poetry video, and then on the background they like read a poem, and then we took little snippets of them of what freedom meant to them, and we made a video collage, and then we had them it was like a bunch of stuff. We had them create like posters. And then and we were reading the amendments in the Bill of Rights at the time. So, you know, they're constantly like thinking about what does freedom mean to me in considering like free speech or, you know, right to arms and challenging the different amendments. And so we did an exhibition at City Hall, which was really cool. We took over, which was also like interesting, but anyways, we took over this like empty information booth and we made a big installation where we hung the posters and they were transparent. And we had projectors playing their video and it was ongoing. Like the only time the exhibition turned off was when the power was out. And so we left it there for about a month and you could go and visit it. And the ironic thing was I got in trouble for that. I remember it was my first year there and the superintendent came up to me and asked me like why I would choose to do it at City Hall and not the school district. And it was no brainer for me. Like, we're talking about the amendments, we should do it at City Hall. But that's just a side note of the stifling institution, or that stifles creativity. But yeah, we did it and it was really awesome. And kids, you know, all took a field trip. We set up the installation together. We had a little party with pizza and then we left and just let the public kind of take what they wanted from it. And yeah, that was probably my favorite. We did other things like on campus. We did altars, memorializing people who have lost their lives to gun violence. And then we did an essay on that. And we also did a book it was cool. We called it AmeriCompton. With my ninth graders, and they went around their neighborhood and just shot a lot of photos, and we were like redefining what America was. Yeah, and that was my first year, and it was really exhausting, and it was my favorite year. And I saw kids. I've had the opportunity to teach those ninth graders again in 11th grade, and our bond was so tight because I got to see them not only like find their creative voice, but like find their voice and to also know it's okay to challenge things. And I was sad to see them graduate, but that was a really special year. And I think it was because of that creative relationship that we shared in the classroom. And there's something about that that's really deep.
Okay. Excellent. It's a very good project, seemed like a couple of projects there. Now, Brother Mashinda, you have a lot of teaching experience. And we want to hear from you when it comes to the cultivating that curiosity.
Well, I mimic, what I've heard tonight. It's very interesting. I see similarities, in my experiences over the years and currently. But I think my experiences, just personally, in the classroom, my delivery system, how I delivered in the classroom is trying. Tonight, creating a relationship.
Okay. Brother Mashinda, you're going in and out. Okay. Brother Mashinda,
what's that? You can't hear me?
Oh, now I can. You was out for a little while there.
Hold on. So anyway, I was just saying that appealing to different learning styles and
okay, we're gonna have to come back to Brother Mashinda. All right.
Students, can you hear me?
You went out again.
Okay, can you hear me clearly right now?
At the moment, yes.
Okay, so again, I said creating those relationships, I think, are very important, identifying, who that individual is, so if you have 30 students, you should know each one of them, but now the design, I think that the structural design of the system, in other words, waking up early in the morning and having to be at school at an early hour and be there all day and then you got to take a look at subject matter, and then you look at, and again, I'm not knocking any subjects, in other words, if, you know, that's part of the freedom of teaching, you know, if you're in history or if you're in, you know, but at the same time, you know, given a well-rounded approach, and at the same time, appealing to those learning styles, you know, because kids come in, they're bored. Adults come in, they can be bored. So how do we get them involved? You know, I think I mentioned it on a previous podcast. I had a chance to visit a school for dyslexia, you know, that actually, you know, caters to the needs of students with dyslexia. We're talking, I think the grades for our early grades all the way to 12th grade, I think it's K through 12, you know, it seemed like they were gonna add a grade or something, I forget, but anyway, it was very interesting, you know, when you walk into those classrooms, you know, we talk, you know, you're trying to, you know, spark, you know, create, you know, creativity, get them, you know, to use their minds and to explore, you know, and to learn, you know, whatever the subject matter is, back to the subject matter, whatever. But again, certain system designs don't allow for that, you know, because everything is timed, you know, or blocked, or, you know, versus, you know, just, Why not have class outside? You know, everybody likes to be outside. Let's go on the bleachers and talk, you know? I'm just, you know, I'm kind of being hypothetical, of course. We might can think of other places to go. Let's go to somebody's house, you know? But, you know, maybe the regulations won't allow us to do that. You know, we can't go to anybody's house. But, you know, just making education not fun, appealing, you know. So again, we have strong soldiers on the phone, on the call tonight that, you know, like I say, I'm sure that, you know, and including yourself, I know that you try to be as dynamic as possible in trying to impress upon them the importance of learning and trying to make it fun, make it interesting, you know. And then once you make it interesting, then, you know, they start connecting the dots and then they become more creative, you know. But you know, there's too many things that, well, that, like I said, there's a lot of barriers, a lot of things in place, you know, systemically that may say, well, and then like Dr. Ross said, it's so many other things that are going on, subject matters in competition with other things that are going on in life. You know, people are, you know, we have so much time in a day. And so we choose to, where we want to spend that time. So you have students that may show up for whatever reason. Probation officer told them you better go to school. Mom and daddy say you better go to school. Or you might just kind of want to go to school, but you don't know how to study, and you're kind of half in, half out. And I can go on and on because there's different levels of where a person is in their life. It's not like a lot of people say, oh, they just lazy. No, that's not it. Those folks have a story, you know, and what I like to think I specialize in is getting those folks in, you know, the ones that's there and they got one foot in and one foot out, you know, like Dr. Ross said, I heard him a while back, you know, he was talking about, you know, hey, they got a lot of good children, you know, I mean, they got some bad ones, but, you know, let's try to grab the ones that's kind of, you know, we know that they can make it, let's push them over, then maybe we can grab some more, but, you know, the ones that are the kind of getting it, let's kind of push them over the top, you know, those kind of things, but not to leave out, you know, the underdog, the ones that's got a bigger struggle in their life, you know, so understanding their struggle, you know, but then it comes down to time. Do we have time to really get to know who this person is? Is that, you know, I've been told, hey, you got 5 or 10 minutes to, you know, to get them in and out, you know, and it's like, man, I can't even greet you in 5 minutes, you know? I want to let you know that I appreciate you even showing up and so forth. And then once we get over the sincere greeting, then let's get into the business. Like, you know, what can we do? What do you want to do in life? What's going on? You know, but they'll say, hey, don't spend too much time because we only got, yeah. So anyway, the constraints and the barriers that are in place to stifle the creativity. And when you stifle, the imagination doesn't work when the creativity juices aren't flowing, you know, your imagination is not going to take you anywhere. You're not going to invent anything because you're locked in a kind of a mental prison, you know, kind of, you know, so. So anyway, miseducation, you know, misdirection, miss this, miss that, but it's not really that. It's kind of like systemically driven that way. But there, like I say, there are warriors out there that, you know, we we work against that. We work in that struggle regardless. We do what we can, but it's a tough job. So anyway, I think I'm done with that since you brought me in this, Mr. Rasaki.
All right. Now, I'm going to go to Dr. Strong because it's kind of rare we see her. So I want to go to Dr. Strong. Dr. Strong, now I know you are been in teaching capacities and the work that you do. I know you minister, you've been in the juvenile system and all of that. So what have you been able to do as far as creativity when it comes to teaching, you know, people and the kids?
Well, thank you for having me and as they say, busting me out. But I believe in the KISS principle, keep it simple, sweetheart. And when my oldest son showed signs of dyslexia, when he first wrote his name, he wrote it and said it perfectly backwards. And I simply told him one thing. I said, Andre, you did a very good job. I say, but it goes in the other direction. And when I told him that, something must have clicked in his mind because he never wrote it backwards again. From then on, he wrote it in the other direction. And I give that example to say that a lot of times we overthink things. We overthink a lot of things that should be really, really simple perspectives, but we just overthink things so much. And the second problem is every time children get just to this line, they move they raise the expectation. In other words, they hadn't even met this expectation. That happened right here in Shelby County. The children hadn't even met this expectation, and the school board superintendent said, well, we're going to raise the standard. Well, why would you do that and they can't even meet this one? Let's get this one first. Why would you change the math where parents would not be able to help their children to get their homework? Why would you do that? Do you want the child to be that dependent on the system and handicap the parent? It's a lot of the observations that could be made to show that they really don't want the system to work. I've never, may not be nowhere else, but here where I live, I've never heard one complaint about private schools. Never. Never complaints about curriculum, never complaints about anything. So if you were as interested as you say you are, why would you not apply whatever standards they got that they never have complaints about? Why wouldn't you apply those standards to the public educational system? There are a lot of red flags that say, we really don't want this to work. You know, and we're going to make teachers think that we want it to work. We're going to make parents think that we want to work, but what we really are going to do, we're going to say we want it to work, but we're going to work hard so that it does not work. That's the appearance it gives to me. And I'm an outsider of traditional education, but I've made that observation.
Interesting. Very interesting. Okay, thanks a lot for that. Brother Doctor.
Yeah.
Brother Doctor.
Yeah.
Now you've been in supervisor positions, and And you also been in education. So what have you, because I know you had some success with running programs for the department you worked in. What were some of the creativity that you added to what you were doing?
Repeat the last part. I didn't hear you on the last part.
I said, what were some of the creative things that you were doing to be successful with some of the programs that you had going on?
I just listened to the needs, man. Everybody needed asking around for advice, and most of it just come on the fly, man. You're there, and you know, it just hits you there. I mean, when you're dealing with an issue, or you know, trying to get people to you know, think of something new. But most of it was just listen from ideals from, you know, from people outside the department I worked in, you know.
So, okay, so can you say that again? Because I kind of got some background noise. I wasn't able to hear that clearly, Brother Doctor.
Yeah, I said the main thing, you know, was getting ideals from outside, from other departments and companies, man, and, you know, trying to stimulate people to think a different way, look at different things, just hearing a bunch of ideals from the community and just kind of, you know, cherry picking the best ideals and just put them into play.
Okay, so you basically use a lot of resources that were around you. That
right,
was available.
Right.
Okay. Okay, sounds good. All right, Sister J Dub.
Yeah, one thing it got me thinking was like when Dr. Terry Strong was talking about like that we overthink things and how arts play such a crucial role in like emptying out the mind. And I actually had a conversation with a young lady today who got suspended. She's in one of my AP classes, but she got suspended for getting in a fight. And then we talked it over and she just starts crying. And she was like, I just have so much on my mind. And I told her, like, when we have a lot on our mind, the quality of our decision-making diminishes, like whether you're a young person or you're an old person, and you need to find a way to cry that out somewhere, talk with a therapist, talk with people, but you need to get it out. And I feel something I noticed at with young people, especially when they're dealing a lot at home, obviously they have a lot on their mind. And because they have no way to clear their mind, it compromises their decisions. And I know, like lately I've been really into like meditative arts, and it does seem like the system is rigged, because the arts is the first thing that is cut off. And when you go to private schools and when you go to suburban schools, they have a really thorough arts program. And not every kid has to be a career artist, but I feel like there's more room in schools. There's more funding available. There's more of an appreciation for the students to be exposed to the learning. Which is not like to say the community isn't, because it's like in, you know, the city where we work, it's like there's art everywhere. There's art, there's people creating their own art, selling their own art. And it's just like, but once you get to the school site, it's like all of that gets stripped. And, you know, we have one art teacher and we have a photography teacher too, but we have like a really small handful of art teachers, or even like our band teacher, and their resources are slim, and even like our art champion teachers are exhausted, and that it's been like that, and it's like no one even cares to get to that because the test scores aren't there, and then next year the standards are going to be even higher. So it's like, when will we ever get around to talking about that? It's,
can I speak to that particular thing that you just said? In my career, I worked at in the correctional system, and one body of research found that the criminal mind and the creative mind almost overlap. They are so close. And if you don't allow a person for their creative juices to flow properly, they will venture into the criminal world. There was an extensive study done on that, and you might want to research that, but they are very close. That's why you see so many people in the system. They are the most creative people you've ever seen. They are some of the most beautiful artists, some of the most beautiful voices. They are so creative. And because they weren't allowed to use their creative ways in the proper fashion, they use them in the wrong fashion.
Yeah.
By Johnny, Roger Key.
Yeah, you want to say something?
I just want to say, it's you have different issues that affect schooling today. You got private schools, charter schools. You have private schools where they pay. And so, and part of the responsibility of the parent is to volunteer. That's a part of paying for the tuition. Second, you have charter schools that teach the same thing as public schools and is governed by a public school. They just don't have the school board over. You have homelessness and foster homes and placement homes that are at an all-time high. Most teachers want to teach a kid like they don't have no problems, like they don't have no issues, and put a demand on them and not know what their home life is, not know what their personal life is, and don't create space for them to feel safe, wanted, or loved in their classroom. Someone that they can come up to and talk and be approachable. You got to love to teach. You got to love it. The kids feel you, they feel you. And some kids, they just for whatever reason, maybe they're on drugs, maybe they just full of so much depression they can't feel you. But many students will feel the love and commitment you have. So when you look at the absence of creative environment, we used to have talent shows. We used to have competition with other schools and things of this nature. Because of violence, because of budget shortage, like right now in certain public schools, they're talking about taking Fridays off because of teacher shortage and making the day up later and doing all kinds of stuff. Sport, and then you had COVID this year for 2 years so far. That stifles a lot of creativity. But as Dr. Strong said, you have to make a way out of no way. And you don't stop being you as a teacher. They had to do remote learning this year. So a lot of teachers are feeling like I'm leaving this profession. A lot of them are retiring. A lot of them are saying, hey, look, I can do something else. I'm depressed. Because, you know, I'm a classroom teacher. They got me teaching remote. I don't like it. You know, I got a degree, so let me go sell insurance. Let me go get into real estate. Let me go in, you know, a lot of good teachers are leaving the field. So my point is that if you really love it, Ms. Dove, you know, and you really want to work with these students, you know, you have to put the time in. Right, after school programs, you know, and it's hard because of the finances and then getting students to support it. You know, you have to, you know, it's hard with the leadership because at a school, you want a culture, whereas when a freshman come there, there's already an atmosphere and a structure there of creativity, and they come into it and they see the junior, the sophomores, the juniors, and the seniors, you know, focused. Then they have to get focused. But if they come in and there's a chaos and madness and disorganization and rules changing by day, and teachers are locking their doors and you know, teacher, if your student late, you lock them out, and you know, I mean, how are you gonna teach them if you lock them out? And then, but you got to have discipline. I agree. You know, you want to teach them the importance of being on time and things of this nature. But it's like teaching somebody to shoot with their left hand. You don't get mad at them and say, hey, you can't play until you can shoot with your left hand. You keep saying practice, practice, practice. And sometimes you get frustrated, but you can't get frustrated. You know, you don't give up on the youth. You know, you don't give up. But anyway, my point is that it's a struggle. It depends on the school district. And it depends on how much leeway the principal and the counselors coordinate together to create a safe, motivating environment that make kids want to come to school, want to learn, want to get along with the other students, and don't see it as an opportunity to bully or to just, this is our audience, this is a theater, and let me be the star of the show. You know, and a lot of that goes on. But go ahead, that's what I have to say.
All right, thanks. Yeah. Okay, Ms. J. Dub.
Yeah, no, I'm just soaking everything in on how to, I was just writing notes. I don't really have, I'm kind of like thinking in solution mode because I always end up going there somehow. And just knowing like the importance of creativity, like for the psyche and for the individual and for identity. I found it super fascinating, like the study. So thank you for that, Dr. Terry Strong. I'm going to be looking that up. Because I always found it, it really stuck with me on who, because I used to teach spoken word in the Bay Area. And it would be really, I saw a lot of like students would come because they had no other choice. And it was always like the ones, I think we, I'm not sure who mentioned it, but early on, like let's get the good students who are like kind of on the edge and they have like a deciding factor, maybe like in 10th grade, like, am I gonna be out in the hallways the whole time, eventually go to continuation school, or am I gonna like give school a try? And I feel like it's those kids who are actually really brilliant and they just can't fit into a box. And so we've kind of
really is.
And actually, like, our reading class this year, I'm so stuck on this, on why kids are so disenchanted with learning. And we're going over like Frederick Douglass and Malcolm X, how their epiphany came through learning and knowledge, and that's through creativity. And even Malcolm X essentially learned how to read in prison.
Right.
And it's like, and it's so, and those were two individuals that really broke through society. And the fact that we don't have the arts in school, it's like very dark to me, because then it's, we aren't giving them that alternative pathway to enlightenment. And then we're really pretty much like, it's just a double, like a double lock on like the existing locks of the school system to like our young people, to their own minds. Because at the end of the day, if you're a young adolescent, I feel like you're gonna choose the hallways versus self-discipline versus thinking long-term versus like having patience and just sitting through class and understanding this is something you have to do and maybe you'll grow into it, or, you know. And we lose a lot of kids 11th grade. Like, I don't see a lot of students that my 10th grade teacher had, my 9th grade teacher had. It's like completely different roster, because I don't know, Mr. Moore, you might be able to talk more on this, but yeah, I'm seeing all the connections there.
Yeah, well, these past 2 years coming through the pandemic, it's been kind of difficult to gauge a few things, because we was online for that extended amount of time and then we're back in person. So I would have to really kind of take a closer look at some things when it comes to those students that's on the fence. You know, you have some that they could just, like, they could go either way. And I would have to kind of pay more closer attention to that. I just know that we have to make sense of what we're doing. And then, you know, this particular school year, we're testing more than usual. And then the material the information that's being tested, you know, the content of the test, majority of it is the kids, we haven't even taught them that material. So it's just a heck of a challenge right now to deal with all we deal with. And then, you know, and to be able to have kids learn and be successful. So you do your best.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. Just you do your best. And like Professor Rod, I learned a lot from being in his classes, where you teach that sacred knowledge that you may have and able to reach students the best way you can and speak the truth as much as you can. Be very truthful with them and do your best, that's all. So Brother Doctor and Brother Mashinda, is there anything else that you want to add?
I just have one question.
Okay, go ahead.
You guys, the teachers, it's working in the system. and you just kind of talked about it a little bit. I just want to know personally, because I was in the, like where I came from, where I worked at. How you feel working in the system when you know it's not perfect? You know, it's just not right. You know, she wants the arts and you can't get all the arts and you know there's a problem there, but you keep working there. How you feel about that? Yes, that goes to everybody on the panel, that's professors and teachers.
Brother Mashinda, you wanna speak to that?
What was the question, sir?
Brother Doctor, can you repeat the question one more time?
Yeah, I'm saying, you know, some teachers there, you know, you see there's an issue there in the system you work, there's a problem. You know, things need to be done a different way, but you still continue to work there. How do you feel? How do you personally feel working in the system when you know the system's kind of wrong? It's not right. It needs to be fixed. How do you feel working there?
Well, you know, I think, you know, I'm going to yield, go back to that what Dr. Rye had mentioned in one of the talks. You know, it's like it's a constant struggle, you know, and it's, and, you know, there have been some gains, you know. I mean, of course, where I've worked, I mean, it was a time where certain things just wasn't happening. And over a period of time, things have evolved, you know, to in a positive way. Slowly, you know, certain things, and then some things just ain't happening. But, you know, I think for me, you know, there's reward in what I do as far as, and it's not like I'm looking for reward. I guess as humans, we look for reward, but it's automatic, you know, it's kind of like you get what you put in, you know, so, and it's not a perfect scenario by no stretch, and it's a struggle. And so I'm saying that I'm energized by the fact that I recognize that, kind of like what you're saying, I'm energized by the fact that, you know, I'm striving toward trying to make change. And eventually, I mean, again, I'm not going to save the world personally, you know, but I like to think that identifying my purpose, why I'm here on the planet, you know, and which is a man, that's a, you know, so once you identify that, you know, which I'm clear, you know, so that's how I get through my day. That's how I do it. I don't have bad days, you know, I have good days. I recognize, and I'm constantly learning now because, you know, the more I expand my knowledge, the more I listen to others, you know, give me food for thought, that type of thing. But, you know, my cup's half full, not half empty. And, it's a struggle a lot of times, but I'm up for the challenge. So that's how I was groomed. That's how I was raised, you know. And so I'm just running, you know, trying to do what I can. But that's pretty much my simple answer to that.
Okay. Dr. Strong?
I want to expand that question just a little bit because it's an excellent question. But my expansion of it is, how do you feel when you have an understanding that for decades, I know for the last five decades, politicians have run on the platform of I'm going to do things better. And one of those things that they're going to always do better is education. And somehow it has never gotten better. How do you feel as a constituent of that politician that runs on that, that says that, but never puts money, energy, intention into it?
Do you want to answer that, Dr. Strong?
I wanted somebody else to answer it because I've never worked in the system. I've always, the system that I did work in was the criminal justice system. And I did intentionally make some things you know, made some noise about some things, made myself an official hellraiser of one to try and get something done about it. And it took me from 2005 to 2012, but something was done about this particular situation of juveniles being bound over as an adult, you know, here in Shelby County. You know, I don't believe in charging children as an adult because they're not adults. And so that's why I asked the question, how do we continue to allow them to run on these, to even control the system that they haven't fixed? Why do you have school board members who've never taught school a day in their life, who know nothing about the system, but yet they can run for school board and make decisions for children? Never had a child, never, those kinds of things. We do things what's the word for it? Crazy, for lack of a better word. I mean, and we sit back as John and Jane Q. Public, and we feel our hands are tied. We feel helpless. We feel, so we just be silent. So what do we do?
That's a right.
Yeah, appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly. Well, you know, I was on the school board, and I was the only one that had kids in the school, the school district on the school board.
See?
That happens. When you deal with politics, people vote them in. And it's not like school boards are, you know, you can get appointed if to someone term if they're not... If they're not there, or if they die in office or something like that. But most of the time, the people vote them in. And who encourage them to vote? They got what they call Democratic parties, Democratic clubs. They got ministers. They got, yeah, they vote their friends in. They vote people who just want to serve, even though they have no ideas.
You can't do a judge like that.
Yeah, well, no, judges are elected. A lot of judges are elected.
Exactly, they're elected, but there is a certain criteria that they've got to meet in order to even run.
Well, yeah. But see, there's no qualifications for people to run for office.
It should be.
Well, you can. That's up to the voter to set their standards to get my vote. You would have a free society if people could tell you can't run for office because the system tells you that you can't run because you're not qualified. That's not going to happen. What you have to do is, most people don't know, the most important offices are your local offices.
Now, that's true.
So that affects you day to day. But getting back to the kids and the challenge of the system, the schools have become commercial. Look how many community colleges they have in urban areas. 8, 9, 10 different community colleges. Look how many high school districts they have. Look how big some high school districts are. It's all about economics, federal money, Title I money, this, that. I remember some people using, that wasn't even in poor areas, but they would claim that they were poor just to get federal money. Uh-huh. You go out to Irvine and they got open campuses. The security guards wear blazers. The kids can walk off campus and go eat and come back. When you come to urban areas, they got iron gates, look like a penitentiary.
Yeah,
it's like a penitentiary. You know, you can't get in as a parent. You can't even come in on campus. You know what you want? I mean, why are you coming here? You know, and trying to get a parent conference is very difficult, or a guardian conference. Now, that's irregardless of that. Your job as a teacher is to teach. Those are the things that you're faced with. That's why you got to go and get a credential. That's why they have you do student teaching. That's why you go through all the changes that you had to be qualified as a teacher. You need to have a public school credential. You have to take an oath. You are bound by the system. That's what Ms. Dove was talking about. The system is not kept up with the changes. You're trying to teach kids the old way in a new environment, and it's not working. You know what I mean? Most teachers don't know the street language, don't know. I mean, like, I taught parenting. I taught juvenile hall for 3 years, or three or four. I taught Linwood School District, Compton Unified School District, you know, and they're different. They're different in many ways. The demographics has changed, you know, with regards to testing. You have limited English speaking people. It's not the same. It's not a simple answer. But your classroom is your world, and so I've had students ask, "Can I just stay in your classroom, Mr. Ross? I just want to stay in your classroom."
I can believe that.
You know, and you know, you say, "Hey, yeah, go ahead, man, stay here. I'll let your teacher know you over here." You know.
So, Professor,
because you're a headache, they say keep him. You know,
Professor Amin Ra.
Yes.
Has there ever been a study done, to study the different?
Because
what do they come up with?
There's a move toward charter schools. Private schools were you know, you used to have what they call Catholic schools, mm-hmm. and nuns taught without credentials.
Right.
Without teaching skills. You understand, the nuns were the teachers. It has evolved, though, with regards to the Catholic schools. They weren't making the money, so they opened them up that you could just pay to come to my school. You don't have to be a Catholic. You know? Even though they give you a religious class. They want the athletes. I mean, look, Bourbon Day, Martyr Day, St. Bernard, all of them. All them schools got good football teams, good basketball teams that generate money. So they put profit over a lot of education. Then, but not don't give me some of these kids, some of these youth, as Ms. Dove was saying, she's saying that, you know, she wants to, in my opinion, correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Dove, want to be able to let the people, students be motivated through the arts, like up north in the coastal schools up north. You know, they have a lot of jazz, a lot of open mic, and places where kids can get up and speak their minds and drama classes and all kind of stuff going on. Whereas out here is just a strict discipline code. You know, hey, it's about attendance, it's about performance and on tests, and teachers, you're not supposed to deviate. You know, but you got to do both. You got to teach them to deal with the tests, but at the same time, create that atmosphere like on a Thursday, hey, no teaching, we just gonna do art, a spoken word or do something, you know, or dramatization. That's up to you to work it out with your teacher to let them say that, hey, this is how I keep my students engaged. We used to take students and say, hey, we're gonna go sit on the grass. Get out the classroom and sit in a circle. All kind of different ways in which we use to motivate or to change, break the monopoly of what a student is going through. But at the same time, what you're asking is, these public individuals that are making decisions on the schools, that's on the school board, sometimes they're using that just to make a political statement to go to a higher level of politics. They really don't care about the school. They just got that to get a name for themselves in politics, and they really don't care. So superintendents run schools, and they generally get the board to go along with what they say. The board hire them. One person the board is only supposed to hire is the superintendent. And the superintendent is the only one that can put stuff on the agenda. But because they can fire him, he tried to get the majority of votes to do what he wants. And so he gives them special treatment, special trips, special little programs that they want to see in the school. And then they support him in his leadership. He has supposed to go through an evaluation. You see, they got what they call an ed code, an educational code. These are laws that governs the school. And most teachers don't even know about the ed code. It's generally the school board and the school attorney. What you do in a school board, as I conclude, 90% of your business is personnel issues, lawsuits, discipline of teachers. That's what you do in closed session. You meet with your attorney, and you deal with all the lawsuits you got, and there'd be a bunch of them for different things. You deal with personnel issues, hiring, firing, and approving the recommendations of the superintendent and his staff. You very seldom, every now and then there are engaging board members that go to schools, meet with principals and meet with parents, but most of them are just regular people and they just don't get involved. They let the superintendent run the school. And the only connection they have to the school is when parents come up there and raise hell. But as far as them knowing, it's just like potholes in the city. If the city councilman don't live there, he don't see the pothole. And even though he's on the city council, if they don't shop there, they don't see how bad the stores are. And that's the way some of these people on school boards are. They're not engaged with all the issues of the school. And it's a sad commentary. But me as a teacher, I don't care. I'm going to find a way to reach those students and get them to learn and want to learn not only in my class, but try to get them to learn the importance of them getting more out of school than the school get out of them. You're going to be here for 12 years, from kindergarten all the way up to 12th grade. You're not going to be here forever. What are your plans when you leave? You will never be 16 again. You will never be 15 again. Now, what are you going to do when you're 22 if you're not preparing to be 22? You see, and that's sometimes it works, sometimes it don't, And like you were saying, they go by certain schools, they build prisons based upon certain school districts and their performances, saying that because we know that some of these kids, if 70% of them aren't reading, but on third grade level, they're going to start creating crime. Because they ain't gonna be able to pass tests to get jobs and be self-sufficient. Unless you teach them to be truck drivers, unless you teach them to be high-scale security, it's very difficult because jobs are more technological. If you got a kid that's not computer literate, and in California, you need to know Spanish, New York, in certain parts of San Francisco, you need to know Mandarin or Chinese or Asian language. And these kids are not, they don't even have classes offering that. They used to teach Spanish as an elective, not a requirement, you know, in public, in schools that 78% Latino communities, you know, and the biggest hire of small of employment people are small Latino business. You understand? And there's no requirement for the future generation who could get these jobs if they were bilingual. You know, nobody had that vision, but there are teachers that have that vision. You encourage students to prepare themselves for life. Your biggest test is not what you get on that standardized test, it's how you perform in life and how you see yourself in the future. That's very important to me. I mean, that's where I taught. That's my philosophy.
Excellent. So, Ms. J. Dub, we gonna conclude here tonight. And a very interesting topic, Ms. J. Dub, and a wealth of information was being presented here. And so, is there any final words with you, Ms. J. Dub, and Brother Dr. Mashinda, Dr. Strong? Any final words?
I just want to talk about the pipeline that's being created from high school to HBCUs. My son and his business partner are creating a pipeline, and they are actually going to start putting seed money into that pipeline, creating a foundation to funnel money into the HBCUs, particularly for their referrals.
Okay, we definitely want to hear more about that mm-hmm. as it develops. And we could, matter of fact, hopefully we can get them on here to speak about it. That's excellent. All right, Ms. J. Dub.
Yeah, thank you all so much. It was a great conversation. Gonna sit on this over the long weekend.
Okay. Brother Doctor, Brother Mashinda, any last words?
Thank you, Sister J. Dub. You have a good evening. Appreciate your comments and your you sharing your experience and raising those questions. You know, those are some deep questions that we all got to think about, continue to improve on, and try to make change. Thank you.
Brother Doctor?
Eric, I agree with everything just what Mashinda just said.
Okay. Yes, sir, Professor Rock.
I just want to invite everybody on the 15th. My son, who's the revolutionary principal, Ms. Dove, hopefully you tune in, because he's going to argue why crypto money should be taught in public schools, teaching kids about stock investments, students. He's into that. He's into, you can ask him questions about how he runs his schools too, for creativity. And he had a high graduation rate and a high attendance rate in the LA Unified School District. It's called Pathway School. But anyway, he's gonna be talking about, the future of economics with regards to crypto money, cryptocurrency, Bitcoins, and teaching kids about stocks in public schools, and the need for all of us to learn more about it, because he said that's the future, and a lot of people are going toward that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Excellent. Okay,
it's on the 15th.
15th, that's Monday. Okay, and next week, we got Brother Muko coming back. The topic is, how do you relate to time and space? So that should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's always interesting.
Yeah, so yeah. So I want to thank everybody for being here, and it was a excellent show. We want to keep it going, and each one teach one, and a conscious corner, everybody.
All right.